This week we discussed last week's Oval Office fiasco, the tariffs, and socialism, nationalism, and the free market. Good evening. You're either watching or listening to Redwood Wonk. My name is Eric Kirk. Dave Frank is still out on sabbatical, but we have Matthew Owen again from last week. We've got plenty to talk about tonight. There was, of course, a de facto State of the Union speech last night. And we will probably talk about that a little bit. But as I said to my friends before the show, nobody thinks about those speeches more than a week later. If that. But really what we need to discuss is probably one of the biggest fiascos in terms of international relations that we have had in a very long time, maybe ever, I don't know. But Zelensky was a guest at the Oval Office. And if you watch the whole thing, you can see that there was a little bit of back and forth, but there came to be a point where Trump and Vance just jumped on him, like in a really kind of high school way. And then Zelensky was basically kicked out of the White House and went to London and was welcomed and supported by all of the of Europe's leadership, except for Orban and of Hungary, but pretty much all of them, whether they're conservative, liberal, or socialist, were just playing the grown-ups. And as of today, Zelensky pretty much had to apologize for whatever transgression he did. But I think basically what happened is he got back there and in private, the advisor said, look, he's a child. You've just got to humor him. That's just what you got to do if you want to get this war to an end. And what will we do about his take on Russia? We just got to go one step at a time. But it was embarrassing. Every time I watch it, I get more angry than before. And Saturday Night Live had a great skit about it. As my father said, the only criticism he had is that they were actually more unhinged in real life than in the parody, the Trump and Vance being that. But, the whole argument is over whether or not Russia was the aggressor and should hold the blame for the fact that their troops are in Ukraine. He, of course, is being pressured to give up land, Donetsk and Crimea, and who knows, maybe more, in order to win this peace. As far as I'm concerned, that would be like the Anschluss. It wouldn't end there.
Don't forget the mineral rights.
The mineral rights, right. Yeah. Although there's a lot of question about the enforceability of the mineral rights, but I'll let you talk about the mineral rights and jump in here.
Well, Trump's a businessman and everything he does is on a transactional basis. So if we give you military aid, we expect something in return. He wants the in return. He wants Ukraine to hand over their mineral rights for oil to the United States. He wants to get repaid for all the billions of dollars we've given Ukraine. Trump's never correct on numbers. He just makes things up out of his head and was $350 billion where everyone else is correct. And that's probably closer to $120 billion we've given him, which is less than what the combined European nations have done.
That's
but
right.
Trump doesn't care about facts. He just cares about everything to him is theater. It's all about the TV and what his base perceives him as. Doesn't care about anybody else out there, just his base. That's it. So that's every time you watch Trump talk, realize that last night's joint session of Congress was the same thing. It was a Trump rally for the base. Also, it was 100 minutes long, the longest presidential talk inside Congress ever.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to say about it. I don't even feel like the need to defend Zelensky. I mean, he wasn't wearing a suit. Some reporter asked him about that. Why aren't you wearing a suit? Nobody asked Elon Musk that, when he came with it.
Right. With his child. Yeah.
But the Zelensky, you know, shouldn't have to defend his position. He could die any day. You know, for the past 3 years, Russians have been looking for ways to take him out. He's right. Basically said a long time ago that, you know, he wore, the last time he wore a suit was before the war started. And he said in this exchange, which they're saying is rude, is I'll wear a costume when the war is over. I mean, it's just but for them to, you know, talk about it. I mean, this guy has done the impossible, even with the aid, even with the Western aid. It's pretty remarkable that they've held Russia to where they have. I mean, normally a power like that has to fight a guerrilla warfare, and they were preparing for it. But the Russian front collapsed. They all tried to go on one road, which was really dumb, coming down from Belarus. But I don't want to revisit the war and the rest. But I mean, they're up against a superpower, a tin pot dictator superpower, but still a superpower. They can't really win it in any other way than other than kind of what Vietnam did to us, which is to outlast us, outlast right. our political and economic right. will.
And how many men does Russia want to lose? Allegedly, right. they've lost over 750,000 men in 3 years. I'm going to put it in perspective. The United States lost 58,220 in the Vietnam War over a 10-year period, and that has scars to our country today. We have a wall in Washington, D.C. for that. Right. Russia allegedly lost 750,000 men in 3 years. And exactly what you said, Eric, is how much do you want to bleed? And where the mothers are going to step up in Russia sooner or later and said, we've had enough.
But I don't know if you got to see any of the speeches that the European leaders made. The Prime Minister of Denmark, a woman, just made, I think, an incredible speech in support. Finland as well. I think part of the reason that Trump was a little bit on the defensive was because earlier in the week he had done a joint press conference with Macron and kind of got humiliated when Macron right. was correcting his facts.
Right.
He does not like to be corrected. He
gently corrected his lies. And yeah, but that's what Trump does. So the other thing, too, the important thing we need to talk about is Trump and Putin have sat down the negotiating table. You know who's missing from the negotiating table?
Yeah.
Ukraine. And that's why he's going, hello, it's our country. Can we be involved in negotiations? And we're not going to negotiate by surrendering. I think that's the thing he's telling them. Trump wants them to surrender. Trump actually made the comment, you won't survive 2 weeks without U.S. aid. And Zelensky went like this and said, yeah, Putin told me we won't survive 2 days. That was 3 years ago.
So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons they're okay right now is in the last couple of months of the year after the election, Biden poured all of the allocated aid into the country. That's why it's even close to what Europe has put in. And by the way, per person, we're, you know, in terms of proportion in the country, in terms of our payments, we're nowhere near most of the European countries. I mean, Denmark is like, you know, it's ridiculous. One of the impressions that Trump wants to make is that Europe hasn't really put anything skin in the game, hasn't given them aid. No, they have. They've done what they could, you know, with what they have. And they're probably going to have to increase their own military production for a while. And that's what they're doing. But Germany has pledged to the new leader coming in has pledged to, you know, up the aid possibly by three times as much. So the question is that Putin right now, who must have been really happy with that press conference, right. is not negotiating from the position of strength that he, from a position of military strength as much as seems to have the president doing what he wants for whatever reason.
He's got his puppets doing all the right, saying all the right things for Russia. Reagan is rolling in his grave right now.
Well, the big question here is, yeah, how are you going to have this discussion without Ukraine being at the table? That's that, yeah, you know, right. It's Trump basically wanted to go to Putin, get what Putin was willing to do, and then come back and Ukraine would just accept it. And that's not going to happen.
Put it in perspective, Eric, you're an attorney. It's like a man and a husband and wife going through a divorce, and the wife and the judge are sitting down working out the details. The husband's over. Do I get a say in this? Nope. Yeah. And that's how Ukraine feels right now. They have no say in the future of their country.
Yeah. And there's a really tearful video statement by, I'm forgetting her name, but she's a Ukrainian MP. She was pro-Trump up until that incident. And she said, I thought maybe this was a clever negotiation leading up to the thing that he was, that maybe Trump was going to try to finesse something and make it more equitable with Putin. But she says, I have no confidence in that now. I have no confidence in President Trump. I mean, she said that in tears. She's somebody who has supported him.
Two things I also saw during the Zelensky double team by Trump advances. The Ukraine ambassador to the U.S. was sitting in the front row. She had her hand in her head like this the whole time going, I can't believe what I'm hearing. And Marco Rubio sat there with this blank look on his face, just slumping down in his chair saying, this is against everything I've talked about since I've been elected to Senate.
I mean, yeah, and Saturday Night Live made a big deal of that.
Him slumping in the chair? Yeah.
Yeah.
He just went for his look like this and just kept going like further and further back going, what the hell is going on here?
And so. Afterwards, he made a social media something appeal against Zelensky, but you could tell his heart wasn't in it. I mean, the problem is right now that Zelensky and has to realize is he's dealing with a child. That's what he's dealing with. And so, yeah, you got to humor him. But at the same time, he's going to have to say, and so he won't contradict him when he's talking to him. He will treat him like a child, but there will come a point where he's going to say, no, I can't agree to that. And what's going to happen then?
My favorite, Eric, is when they break out the cameras to the Republican senators and said, did Russia invade Ukraine? And then not a single one of them can answer that question. They all go off in tangents. Well, we got to get these illegal immigrants out of America. That's not the question I asked. Yeah. Did Russia invade Ukraine? Well, you know, we're going with whatever the president said. So,
yeah, I believe the Atlantic was the one that was asking the questions. And one of the responses, I don't even remember the name of the congressperson, was, we're canceling our Atlanta subscription. These are trick questions, you know. they weren't trick questions. They were pretty basic, you know. I mean, but it's the same thing that Republicans can't answer when you ask them who won the election in 2020. All they say over and over again is Biden is our president or was our president. That's not an answer.
Right. I understand.
It's just, you know, how did he become president? Did he like sneak in through a tunnel under the White House? I mean, he either won or he lost. And if he lost and Trump should have been in office, then these Republicans should have been screaming bloody murder. But they can't contradict Trump.
And my favorite line from Trump's joint session of Congress was, the days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over. And the Republicans stood up and clapped. And the Democrats just started laughing hysterically, going, he's up there in the crowd. It's called Elon Musk. We didn't elect him. If you haven't heard today, the Veterans Affairs is laying off or firing 80,000 employees. Oh. So if you think your veterans care was slow and problematic before, I take any organization, a school, a hospital, anything, and cut off half the employees and tell me how's it going to run now.
Well, and we may be in for a constitutional test because the Supreme Court, with Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett,
right?
Yes, and the liberals voted that they have to restore USAID, the funding to for the contracts for the work that's already been done. Duh, basic, you know, and. I'm wondering if there's going to be more like that. I mean, if you go to the list of lawsuits, against the Trump administration right now. I think we're over 100, and there'll probably be several hundred by the time this month is over. And almost all of the decisions are against the Trump administration. Even if the Supreme Court wants to rule in favor of Trump on these things, they can't take all those cases. There's no way.
We have to talk about one thing here, and the whole problem with the Luzinski was Luzinski's fault. He did not bend his knee, lick Trump's boot and kiss his ring, and then kiss his ass. He should have said, "Mr. President, you're the greatest president in the history of the United States. Thank you so much for all your military aid you've given us. Without you, Donald Trump, Ukraine would be gone." Had he started to talk like that, it would have been okay. But you have to kiss his ass first. And if you talk to him like an adult instead of a child, like you're saying.
Yeah. And for one thing, that meeting shouldn't have been televised.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to have arguments, and you're going to basically try to tell Zelensky that he doesn't know anything about Ukraine, and what's going on there, do it off camera, yell at each other behind, off camera. But
made for great TV.
It did. It was, I mean, and it's going to be, I mean, there's already parody after parody after parody. I mentioned Saturday Night Live, but it's just, anyway, we're getting towards the end of this, but this wasn't me even disagreeing with Trump. I disagree with him on his perspective of Russia, but this was just thoroughly embarrassed for our country. It's not going to improve our relationships with anybody other than dictators, if you want to close it out.
Yep, no, I agree. Everything you just said. It improved our relationships with Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and Hungary.
Yeah.
All run by dictators.
All right. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens the next time Zelensky comes in.
Looking forward to it.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com. You are listening to Redwood Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM. The 30 days passed since President Trump initially was going to impose tariffs. He gave it 30 days to negotiate something. I'm not even totally clear as to what he's demanding, honestly. But he was yesterday morning initiated tariffs, 25% tariffs on Canadian and Mexican products, and added another 10% to China. And this led to a very intense speech from Trudeau. We can talk about the fact that basically the Tories had that election in the bag, and now they're on the defensive, having to convince everybody that they would be tougher on Trump than the Liberals. I mean, it's kind of ironic there that way, but the Liberals are climbing in the polls. I think the Tories are still ahead, but he did what nobody else could do. He forced the conservatives in Canada to compliment Trudeau. I mean, 2 months ago, that would have been unheard of. So Trudeau gave a speech, and it wasn't even disrespectful. He said, "I want to talk to the American people. You're going to be hurt by what your government is doing." And then he talked to Trump. He said, "We've been coordinating on this. And by the way, very few immigrants cross the Canadian border into the United States." He might have even pointed out that more people go the other way illegally into Canada because they're immigrants from the South now trying to get there, just like in that X-Men movie. But it's and that they've increased their AI and their helicopters and everything like that. But this really probably isn't about fentanyl or immigrants coming in across the Canadian border. I think this is just red meat. I think he wants to do it because he wants to have a trade war with democracies. I mean, he's turning our closest allies into enemies. And thinking we're not going to get hurt because, hey, Canada imports a lot more of its GDP from us than vice versa. But this isn't the point, because it is going to hurt. Prices of meat would go up if it's not exempted. He is today talking about exempting farmers and produce. He has put off the after I think the three main car companies went in and told him he's an idiot, that he's backing off of that for another 30 days. And probably he's going to have to do other stuff because the markets tumbled. Went down when he, with the exception of NASDAQ, but there's reasons for that, yesterday after he announced the tariffs. They're climbing back up again today when it became clear that there was going to be at least some further pause and maybe some exceptions to the tariffs. But you know, they don't know what's going on. And so everything's kind of in a holding pattern with investments. They don't know what to invest in. It's a complete break from traditional conservatism. It's certainly not consistent with Milton Friedman or F.A. Hayek economics. It's they both told you that said that tariffs were horrible and bad for the free market, which is now global, and 25%. I mean, you know, it's we get a lot of the oil. We're putting a 25% tariff on the oil. Who's going to pay for that? The Canadian government? No.
No, American consumers. Right.
Yeah.
So if you're not buying for a new car on your MSRP sticker, it says in the bottom corner where the car is produced. Because cars often are, they do the chassis and frame here and then they ship it there. And a lot of our cars are produced down in Mexico. So what's happened is a video went viral today of a United States truck, this big Ford truck. He goes, this sells for $80,000. He goes, next month, it's going to cost you $100,000 for the same truck. And that went viral and people went, oh my God, if that's what happens when you have a 25% tariff. The price of this car is going to go up 25% to $100,000, and you, the American consumer, is going to pay for that. People are already going through the grocery store going, oh my God, I don't know if you filled your tank with gas lately, but the man who said day one in office, I'm going to get the price of eggs down, day one in office, I'm going to get the price of gasoline down, egg prices have gone up, and gasoline prices have gone up. Food prices have gone up throughout all the grocery stores. How's your PG&E bill doing? Is it going down? I don't know about you, but mine's almost doubled in the last 2 years. So,
yeah,
but it's not.
I want to be fair here. The eggs aren't entirely his problem. There's a bird flu, but he's not doing anything to address it.
But he blamed Biden when we had the bird flu. It was Biden's
killing the birds, right?
But Biden's gone. He's not the president anymore. You know who's president today? Trump. Yeah. So that means any bird flu is his problem.
Yeah. No. And if he's not going to kill the chicken, if he's not going to allow the chickens to be killed that were sick, we're going to have a bigger problem.
Yeah, right. Especially people around the country are figuring out these mass layoffs are not good because that's going to slow down the economy when hundreds of thousands of people get laid off quickly. And the second is people are actually going out in the grocery stores looking at prices going, oh my God, these have gone even higher than I thought. I was pissed off last year. Who's president today? Prices are higher today. That's Trump's fault.
I mean, what's the bigger deal is that coffee prices are going up. People, that could start riots. I mean, that's, you know, there were no riots in the Soviet Union in the last days when the food prices went up. It was when they ran out of cigarettes. That's when the riots started, you know.
Cigarettes and vodka, right.
Yeah.
But if you go in for a latte and suddenly it's $9.95.
Yeah.
People go, oh my God, what happened? So.
Yeah. I know it's and that is something Trump could improve, but it's just it's an international problem. But part of what needs to happen for that is climate change mitigation. But he's not going to do that. So, the point here though is that why is he making war against Canada? Is it even clear as to what he wants? Canada says we're already complying. We're doing it. What does he want? Mexico they already had the tens of thousands of troops by the border by an agreement with Biden in 2021, but they didn't take them away, you know, so it's they're still there, you know. But as we may have discussed, I don't know if I discussed it with you or Dave, but you know, most of the fentanyl doesn't come across the borders, you know, on the back land. Most fentanyl comes through at the checkpoints by people, mostly by American tourists, actually. They slip them through in the cars because that's the safest way to bring it across. If you send it over back land, you're taking a chance that a rival gang will get it, let alone, right. You know, I mean, it's not, it doesn't make any sense. So to say that fentanyl is coming in, Trudeau pointed out less than 1% of the illegal immigration into the states comes across the Canadian border, even though it is the largest national border between two countries in the world, and almost no fentanyl gets through. I mean, some does, but some of it is also getting into Canada from the United States. So it's just it's a bizarre situation where the countries don't even know what to do to stop it. Even China. I mean, you know, China is a bit less sympathetic to us than Mexico or Canada. But even they are like, well, what do you want? I mean, they're not all that concerned about it because they're not as vulnerable as Canada or Mexico are. But they're sort of wondering what are we supposed to do? Now there are things they can do. They can remove some of their own de facto tariffs and the like. But the messaging isn't clear. If you're going to declare a trade war, you should be clear. The trade war will end when A, B, and C happens. And it's a muddled message.
So I want to bring up the Hawley-Smoot Tariff Act of 1930. So the Great Depression started in 1929, and these two senators said, hey, we're going to make America great again. We're going to bring production back to America by putting this 35% tariff on foreign goods coming into our country. Guess what the foreign countries did? They slapped a tariff on American goods going to their countries. So we had a trade war going. American producers dropped 67% of their exports. It has stopped because that foreign country says, we're not buying your stuff anymore. That's it. It's too expensive with these tariffs. So American manufacturing went down by 67%, which helped further the Great Depression. Tariffs are horrible, but loves them. And I don't even think he understands what they are because he keeps saying the foreign country's paying for it. That's not accurate.
That's not how it works. That's not how it works.
But he keeps saying, I think the foreign country's paying for it. It's like, you're the president of the United States. You should be smarter than that. But he's not. So
how would they pay for it? Is there like, can they write a check? I mean, you know, it doesn't even make sense. So it's just, it's not like, you know, they're receiving a bill. You need to pay this for your imports into our country. And no, it's just the taxes added. And then whoever's distributing it in this country has got to either eat it or pass it along to consumers.
So let me bring up the example of that $80,000 truck that was primarily produced in Mexico. When they bring that to the border with a 25% tariff, there's going to be an increase of 80,000 times 0.25 is $20,000, which is going to get cut to the United States. Mexico is not paying that. Whoever's importing that truck to the United States is paying that extra $20,000. And exactly what you said, Eric, that increased cost to me, the wholesaler, is going to be passed on to the retailer, who's going to pass it on to the consumer. All it's going to be is inflationary.
Yeah, it's I've been kind of debating people. I make a mistake of going into forums and debating people, but they're like saying, "Well, good, maybe our businesses will stop exporting and they'll just do business here in America." And I just said, "You've never taken an economics class, have you?" And he said, "And I never will." I mean, just like he was proud of that. I mean, it's just it's over the top. And obviously, you know, being a businessman, and it's actually a debate as to whether or not Trump is actually a good businessman. I mean, there's he made money finally on his TV show, but as far as real estate
investment, president.
Right. Yeah. Well, he's making a lot of money doing that. But he's clearly not an economist. And I think he's pushing this because it's red meat for his base. I think that's the only reason, because there's nothing productive that's going to come out of it other than, you know, does he really expect the countries, other countries, to bend the knee? They're not going to do that. And this is the other thing. The trade war could end tomorrow, and it may, because he's already backing down after the automaker CEOs.
Auto companies, right.
Right. But it's the damage is long term, because Canadian companies are going to say, you know what, we can't rely on this. We're going to have to open up and find other markets, because we can't be worrying about whether or not a temperamental president of the United States is going to start making it so that we can't sell goods to them. So we're going to look. They're looking to the EU. There's even talks of Canada joining the EU.
And so the problem is exactly what you said, Eric. It's happening with American manufacturers who used to sell to Canada, who used to sell to Mexico. Those countries don't want our products anymore. So yeah. The United States is having to lay off staff because their sales are going down, because other countries don't want to pay the tariffs. So they say, we're going to find an alternative. But that hurts American manufacturing.
Well, it is. And it's also will hurt our distributors, because, you know, I mean, they're going to probably start investing in tankers and carry the oil across. I mean, you know, if that's going to be make their oil more expensive so that nobody wants to buy it, and none of our companies want to buy it, that's not good for our security long term. For Canada to decide, okay, they're not our number one trade partner anymore. We can't count on them. I mean, that is it. And like I said, as long as Trump is president, but even now they say, okay, well, you know, if a Democrat was to win in 2028, assuming we have elections, then they would still have to worry long term. Will we elect somebody else like Trump that does this? It's just the destruction of this is so self-inflicting. There is a cartoon of Trump learning the lesson about how tariffs work, and it shows him urinating into a fan and having it spray back at him. I mean, that's what this does.
Right. Right.
Yeah, sure. I mean, any other thoughts on this? It's crazy what he's doing. And Republicans know this, but they don't want to get primaried, so they don't challenge him on it. But I'm told, I didn't watch all of it last night, but I'm told that when he was bragging about the tariffs, that was where the Republicans had the lightest clapping. They're not happy with it.
Wait till avocados hit $3 or $4 each at the grocery store. And then people are going to go, maybe these tariffs aren't so good after all.
Yeah, it may not happen so much in California. We do have our own avocados, but across the country it will. I mean, anyway, we'll be talking about this again unless the trade war ends sooner than expected.
Okay.
You are listening to Redwood Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM. Okay, so for this segment, I want to discuss kind of a bigger picture topic. We have different ideologies that run back and forth in this country. We have liberalism, we have elements of socialism, and we have conservatism, and we have populism or nationalism. And traditionally, if you go back, you know, we tend to have think of politics on like a single line spectrum this way, right? When it's kind of complicated, because for instance, fascists and Nazis identify as right wingers. Conservatives all voted for the Enabling Act, but that doesn't mean their policies are conservative. They are not free market people. They are for the organic unity of allowing rich people to make money, but they want a more controlled economy. And so you have this element of nationalism kind of looking like socialism. And in fact, thanks to the Strausser brothers, the Nazis actually had socialism in the word, even though no people who called themselves in their name, even though no people who called themselves socialists identified with it. It's complicated. It's a long history. Back then in Germany, socialism was like democratic. People wanted to be associated with that word if they could, because it was popular going into the Depression. But we have right now, as we talked about in the last segment, we have you have Democrats as being representing the kind of the left, and you've got socialist elements of it, AOC, Bernie Sanders, a lot of debate as to whether or not he even really counts as a socialist by European standards. But the truth is that every economy is both socialist and free market. There's no pure stuff. Whether you were in the tightest Stalinist regime, there was still at least a black market and even some above the board free trade there, certainly with international business. There is no pure capitalist system. It doesn't work. That the closest we have actually is Haiti, and it's a complete, you know, barren landscape economically and literally. And so it's so you have a certain amount of socialism being publicly owned means of production. I mean, roads are publicly owned and those are means of production. So we have elements of socialism in this country, public libraries, public schools. And so the question of what does it mean to be a socialist? Basically, a socialist is anybody who passes a certain threshold of what they would like to be publicly owned and publicly managed. And probably you're called a socialist in this country if you support public medicine, socialized medicine. Europe, conservatives support that, right? So it's just it's different everywhere. But I wanted to have a little bit of big picture here, because Trump is not a conservative, you know, in terms of you know, like I said, F.A. Hayek or Milton Friedman. He's not a conservative in terms of his foreign policy, at least not by modern sense. Isolationism was actually a tenet of conservatism back in the 1930s. Neville Chamberlain was a conservative, for instance. But so the question is, but the conservatives, mostly who are in the Republican Party, are forced to go along with nationalism and with policies and ideas that are anathema to what they've traditionally proposed. The question is, are we going through an ideological realignment in this country? Is nationalism, as we know it, replacing conservatism in the Republican Party? And is that a permanent?
Part of your thing on nationalism is America first.
Right.
He's picked up on that. So who cares what's going on in the rest of the country? We're going to take care of America. And that's probably what appeals to a lot of the Trumpers out there. That we're going back to the basics of, we're going to look out for America first, but only, and that's never been America post-World War II. We've become the world's cop. There's problems that pop up in hotspots around the world. America's there, whether it's with diplomacy or whether it's there with military. That's what we've always done. And right. It's going to have a hard time breaking up. If we pull out of Ukraine entirely, I'm going to agree with what you said earlier. I think Europe's going to pick up the slack. And our prestige around the globe is going to sink, that we're now standing up for dictators and not democracies. And that's a problem. But that's part of his America First agenda. And I don't agree with it. But a lot of the Trumpers, that's how they think. They kind of think with little blinders on. I'm going to think about me and my family, and that's it. And I don't care about what's going on around the globe.
But we had a proliferation after the Cold War of neoliberalism, of, you know, not ideological liberalism, but economic liberalism. And for the longest time, you know, the Democrats, actually it was Clinton who pushed the free trade policies that even Reagan couldn't get through. You know, there's that old saying, only Nixon could go to China. It may be that only Clinton could enact and sign free trade agreements, right? And so you have this notion that capitalism has changed. It's not what it was, certainly not back in George Washington's day. It's international. It can't, no nation can exist on its own, not even one as large and as economically diversified as ours.
We have a global economy. We may have fought a war against Vietnam back in the 60s. Guess where our shirts are made today? Vietnam. And yeah, we buy them from them. China was our enemy during Korean War. Do you know how many products we import from China? It's a global economy.
That's Walmart could not exist without China.
Walmart could not exist without super tankers taking the crates across the globe. You're absolutely correct. And there's Walmarts around the country, not around the country. There's Walmarts around the globe. So that's the nature of our economy today.
Yeah, I've brought this up in past discussions, but China is really interesting because it is one of the more quote-unquote communist countries, politically speaking, but it is deals with capitalism across the world. It guarantees cheaper labor. It doesn't allow for independent unions. It doesn't have environmental regulations like most parliamentary or other democracies do. After Tiananmen, it was a couple of years after that, I read an article, I think it was in the New Republic, and I'm not sure, but and the author closed it by pointing out the fact that companies were leaving Taiwan because Taiwan's democracy was made it harder on business and going to mainland China where there was less regulation. I mean, the irony of that, and the article concluded with both Mao Zedong and Chiang Kai-shek are rolling in their graves, right? I mean, it's just, things are bizarre there, but this notion that capitalism is inherently liberalizing, that it makes people, it opens up free ideas and the rest, and it's not necessarily true. Capitalism did quite well in apartheid South Africa, and it's doing quite well in China, Vietnam, and other authoritarian countries that are willing to basically protect capital. So as for the exchange of ideas, I mean, Google actually assisted China into being able to come up with a way to censor ideas, right? You know, that was the whole idea, is that we were going to have this. It's just that I do think that we're going to have to rethink politics. I mean, left wing and right wing, that applied to either France or Britain, I don't remember which, but where people happen to be sitting in the seats of a particular parliament. Socialists happen to be in the left wing, and conservatives happen to be in the right wing, liberals happen to be in the middle. And I think that model of politics is probably eroding. We might, you know, because some of the things that Trump actually proposes are, one of the ironies is he was attacked Clinton on the economy from the left, you know, on particularly on trade policies, but on everything else too. I mean, this was the election was seen as one between corporate America and the oligarchs, and the oligarchs won this time around, right? That has been a framework of discussion. And so it's just a question of, he will slam socialists. Hitler slammed any socialist that wasn't a national socialist. Mussolini had been a socialist, had been kicked out of the Socialist Party for supporting Italy's involvement in World War I. But it's complicated. The idea of leaving the economy, this concept, going back to what's his name, Adam Smith, of an economy, a free economy, being ecologically working, you know, in a Newtonian almost kind of fashion. There's nobody that agrees with that totally. We've had collapses. I mean, the Depression happened because we had too much non-regulation in the 20s. And then we overregulate, and then we don't regulate enough, and we get these crashes. I'm just wondering where it's going in terms of politics in the United States.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up, Eric, you talked about neoliberals. Do you remember the neocons post 9/11? Back in 2001, there was this huge movement to the right. But what neocons didn't understand was they want to bring in the military. We're going to be strong. We're going to send our military to foreign countries. There was one problem with that. It wasn't their children going. It was all middle America's children going and dying. And then they asked the magic question, why did my son die in Iraq? What did Iraq ever do to us? Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Matter of fact, 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. Did we attack Saudi Arabia? No, right. We attacked the country that didn't attack us. And the mother started questioning, why did my son die in a foreign country? And did your son go fight there? No, the rich people's sons don't go fight there. This is the problem with neocons. It's easy to send your military off somewhere. But the problem is wars are easy to get into. They're hell to get out of.
It is pretty funny because you do hear MAGA people calling any of us who support, you know, support for Ukraine warmongers, right? I mean, they're literally saying that. You know, well, don't you want peace? And I'm like, I want peace, but I don't want the Anschluss. You know, I want peace that's going to last and not have another invasion 5 or 10 years down the road where Putin or his successor denies it's happening until it's too late. You know, I mean, it's just people on the left that I have debates with about this. Well, you know, when did you start supporting war? You know, it's like I've never been totally opposed to war in every situation. I mean, I hate it. I think it's one of the worst things to happen to people. But there are times such as World War II and a few other, you know, cases where it's not natural. Now, we don't have to be the world's cops. I know that, but we do. And it is ironic because Trump falsely claimed he opposed the war in Iraq. He didn't say anything during that time. He was dead silent. But Hillary Clinton voted for it, right? I mean, that was held against her. Joe Biden voted for it. I mean,
former Prime Minister of Finland said the easiest way to end the Ukraine conflict is to have the Russian troops go back to Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, can happen tomorrow.
I know. War is over tomorrow.
Yeah, it's hard. The things that we're defining as right and left and what the parties stand for, it's really hard. Now, the Democrats don't stand for a whole lot. I mean, one of the things in this country that we always had was our parties weren't political parties in the European sense, where there was an ideology and even a strict charter that survived from leader to leader. Our parties had platforms that they would pass at the convention every 4 years that don't mean anything. And Trump didn't even bother with one this last time around. But the Democrats are kind of a collection of interests that are sometimes at each other's throat. And if anything, I would say since the Reagan era, the Republican Party has become more like a European party where it actually has a set of principles that it's guided by. But it's changed. Ronald Reagan would not fit well in this Republican Party. I mean,
theory is the Democrats stand for people. The Republicans stand for profits. Yeah. That's how I break down the two parties today. But you're absolutely correct. The Republicans have latched onto social cultural issues. They've hang on to the 5 G's and they'll stick with those. God, guns, gay, ganja, and gestation. That's the 5G.
It is interesting because, yeah, they the people in I lost my train of thought here, but definitely you'll hear the even more conservatives now, and certainly on a local level, supporting the legalization of pot. They, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. They're in the industry, right? I don't know who stands for what anymore, but you're right in the sense that, yeah, the Republicans do tend to do it to vote that way. And I know what my thought was, but they do, by playing the culture war, get people to vote against their interests.
Right.
That's, you know, there is a history to that. I mean, there's always people that, were not necessarily happy, but we're willing to accept a certain amount of oppression at working class white people because, hey, at least we're not as bad off as the black slave. You know, I get to be an overseer. I'm going to be exploited, but, you know, I can live with that.
One more thing I have to bring up. Meg is against globalist.
Yeah.
Can you tell me where Rupert Murdoch is from? Australia via England. Now he's got 3 different dual citizenships going on, or tri-citizenships. And Elon Musk is from what country?
From apartheid South Africa.
South Africa. So there's the globalists that are running the Republican Party today. They're right. They should be afraid of the globalists. I am. I'm afraid of Fox News and I'm afraid of Elon Musk.
Yeah, well, and you notice what happened with Steve Bannon over. Well, we talked about a little bit last week, the immigrant techies, the what I forget what the program's called, but
H-1-2 visa.
Yeah, Trump sided with Musk, told Bannon to stand down, and Bannon shut up, and that's that. He is a populist until an oligarch is involved, whether it's in Russia or in our own community. And it is bizarre, but Trump has transformed the Republican Party in a way that has never happened before. There are, as I said, there was isolationism and literally America first in the 30s and in the first part of the 40s. They tried to keep FDR out of the war. That's why he had to go along with compromises like the Lend-Lease Act instead of just wanting to assist, you know, the resistance in Europe at the time. But people wanted to stay out of it. But you can only stay out of it so long.
Until Pearl Harbor.
If you got a prediction?
I've got a prediction.
All right, let's do it then.
You want to go with yours first?
We can go with mine first, sure. That gives you more time to formulate it. All right. That brings us to predictions, and I'm going to go first this time. Last night, the Eureka City Council passed a sanctuary measure. That's the third in our county. We have a countywide sanctuary measure, and we have an Arcata sanctuary measure. I'm told that there's probably one going to happen in Trinidad, the city of Trinidad. Why now of all times? Well, again, this is something you can thank Trump for. Because there is people wanting, when you push against people, people want to push back. Sanctuary measure cities have existed since 1989 when San Francisco established the first one. And it has been upheld in the courts because as long as they're not directly interfering with that. And so I am predicting that by the end of the year, there will be 10 more sanctuary jurisdictions in the country. Okay. Matthew?
My prediction is I'm going to go with James Carville here, the Raging Cajun. He thinks the Trump administration will self-implode in 30 days. I'm not going to say 30, but I'm going to say 90 days. As middle America tries to buy new cars or goes grocery shopping and sees prices going higher and higher and higher, and their paychecks are effectively getting smaller and smaller and smaller, the price of the utilities goes up, the price of the rents goes up, the price of the mortgage went up, the price of housing goes up. They're getting just stuck in the middle. But you know who's not? Is the oligarchs. And they're going to realize that. Does the United States exist for the people, or does the United States exist for the profit of the oligarchs? Like in 90 days, we're going to have a little bit more rumbling out there in middle America.
Well, what's scary is what happens when they do implode. But we'll have to discuss that next time. I mean, will he declare martial law? I don't know. But until next time, stay informed and stay engaged.
Peace out.